Three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
There aren't any Jasons 12 and under. That's a dead name.
Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher.
How many kids do you hear, hey, Marky, it might be almost to the point of Ruth.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio.
You love that name so much, you don't even go by it.
On 100.5 ESPN.
If you call me Mark, I like my name. I like my name a lot.
The ESPN Wisconsin app.
Wilde and Tosh.
And ESPN Madison on YouTube.
It's Wilde and Touch, isn't it?
This is Wilde and Tosh, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
Wednesday edition. We shift gears to Packers Broncos after the Packers win over the Bears on Sunday and all that came with it, including first place in the NFC North edition. The Brian Bulaga to break it all down like he does every Wednesday, the highlight of our week. Oh, and we've got Homer 2 edition. And the I need Tausch's help on something. He's a hat guy. I need his help on this edition of Wilde and Tausch on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee, 100.5 ESPN Madison, 1430 ESPN Beaver Dam, ESPNWisconsin.com, the ESPN app, your Alexa smart speaker, streaming live video, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and of course everything you need on the all-new, all-redesigned, all-free, and all-customizable ESPN Wisconsin app, which you can find in both the Apple and Android app stores. I'm Jason Wilde in Green Bay. Jesse Nelson's in the Everlight Solar ESPN Madison studios, ordering a pizza that should be ready in 68 minutes. And from his undisclosed location, he is the Packers Hall of Famer. He's Mark Tauscher. Tausch, good morning. How are you?
Well, it depends. I had to hang up and leave the show early yesterday. I'm not going to obviously do that at 9:01. That was fun. At 9:02 or whatever it is now. So, you boys had a night to sleep on it. Have we come around on the fact that you guys blasphemized me and we've come around, or are we sticking with our guns?
Jesse, you better get a cousin sub on the line.
Well, Bulaga at 9:30. I feel like we're good. He usually goes till about 11:20.
So for those who
put your souls in a can.
He's choosing violence.
Stuff your sorries in a sock.
He's choosing violence.
No violence. I may not be in violence. There's nothing violent about it.
So
bully some
the academy. Before we get any further into this, first of all, what Tausch is referring to, in case you missed the show and you had a lot of stuff going on, I had a shovel this morning, whatever it was that you had on your schedule that you haven't caught up.
Do your girls ever shovel, or do you always
shovel?
They do.
No, they help. Yeah, they help sometimes. Not today. They had a two-hour delay today, so we let them sleep in, so I was out there shoveling on my own. There was more snow than I was anticipating, by the way. But
snowblower still has not moved. It's getting to be antique status. Is that where we're at?
It's definitely not antique. It is brand new.
It's never been used, right?
Never been used.
That's right. Yep.
What a waste.
Shameful.
Hey, guys, we just traded two first-round picks for Micah. But no, you're not playing Micah today.
He's not ready yet.
No. Leave him in the garage.
He's going to learn the system.
Leave him in the garage.
For 4 years.
How idiotic is that sound? Hey, Goody, I know you just gave up a bunch to get a great snowblower, a.k.a. Micah, But no. We're not playing him in that game. No, it's okay. Just not enough.
So
we're going to wait till the NFC Championship game to play him. That's what you're doing with your snowblower.
I don't even know if he'd play him then.
We'll get our friend Stephen Ahrens on the line.
And
I'll let him know that we've compared my beautiful Ahrens snow thrower to Micah Parsons. He'll be thrilled with that. I think he would probably agree with Tausch that I need to actually use it. But nevertheless.
13 inches of snow. Nah, it's not 15.
No, we didn't get that much. There is a inflection point where I will. I mean,
No, there's not. You haven't had one yet.
We haven't had a big enough storm where I felt it was necessary. Correct.
In 4 years, there hasn't been enough snow for you to use your snow plow in Green Bay.
I'm going to say this. This is the first year in a long time we've had a bunch of snow before the new year.
Or before Christmas.
This is beautiful.
It's nice with all the lights up and everything. Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it's a beautiful deal. It's a beautiful deal.
Snowplow drivers, kudos
to y'all again.
Yeah.
What?
I'm glad the snow brings you joy because the way things were starting, I was a little concerned. So, for those of you that did not.
You don't get me, man.
I do get you.
That yesterday brought me like go ahead. I'm not gonna.
It was very fun.
All right, continue.
And you did a great job.
With your apology to
about. Let me before I get into my non-apology, let me tell you how great you played that whole thing. It was amazing. I had no idea at all. It was just all incredible how good you were.
Thanks.
The question I have, because for those, again, if I could recap briefly, Tausch was mad at us for not issuing an official apology because there are some teams in the Sweet 16 of the NCAA volleyball tournament that the home team at the site of the regional is not playing last, like the Badgers did in their first round matchup. And then the North Carolina and UTEP played first, and the Badgers played Eastern Illinois.
Yeah, yeah. Get early
Tausch
for that
felt
one.
The Badgers should have played first, which again, not only did Jesse and I, but more importantly, his brothers.
Yeah, and I got news to report on that too, which is irritating.
The Academy said basically, get a clue, bro, why they would put it. The home team last. And then yesterday.
One of the outside of the number one overall seed take, I believe Craig thinks this is my worst take, which is very bothersome to me.
I can't believe all of this is about volleyball start times.
And by the way, that sounds like a tease to the fact.
Aren't we the home of Wisconsin volleyball?
We sure are.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do you mean you can't believe it?
Big one on Friday. Sweet 16.
Doesn't sound like it.
Stanford.
I can't believe this.
That sounds to me like Craig is on the same page as Jesse and I are. So Tausch wanted an apology because of the four sites for the regionals in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight to get to the Final Four, at two of the four, the host institution is playing the first game of the day.
And letting their fans come when they want. Yeah.
And so Tausch believes.
Including the one impacting Wisconsin, most notably for us.
So Tausch believes that Craig, Patrick, to a lesser degree, he was not as staunch in his criticism.
He's not interested in this one. No, he hasn't jumped into this one quite.
Too busy working on Saved by the Bell trivia. And Jesse and I all were like, dude, come on. Obviously, there's a reason why you want people to come. You know, it makes sense to have the home team first or last. The fact that two home teams are first, Tausch believes that we now owe him an apology. He did not receive it yesterday, so he left.
Quit the show early. Yeah.
Today, he comes full of exuberance.
Yep.
Beautiful waiting. Snowfall last night.
Very P&B. Excited that it'll be a white P&B. Christmas. Yep. Expecting an apology, and there is none to be proffered. I'm not apologizing. The fact that two locations in the NCAA tournament are doing it wrong does not make you right.
The fact that you said it never happens and then it does happen doesn't make you want to apologize. That to me seems stubborn and bullheaded by a journalist that should be able to say, you know what? Sometimes information and things change. I need to be able to adapt with them. That's what that should tell me.
You know,
but it doesn't. And that's troublesome to me as an analyst, not a journalist, that journalists would do that. That troubles me.
I appreciate your concern. Where did Craig fall on this? Because it doesn't sound like he backed down either.
He did not think that he needs to apologize. I'll just leave it at that. He said some other things that were a little more hurtful that I'm not going to bring up. He took a couple of pot shots about, you know, his he took a couple of pot shots at different institutions.
No,
I'm not going to. I'll let him call in and do that if he wants.
He's not going to.
He will not. There's a certain sacredity about
sacredity.
It's sacredness. Yeah, I'm not going to put his business out there. But in essence, he believes that doing it the way Wisconsin did it was very capitalistic, which, of course, I've said for 10 years, I am a raging capitalist.
You are. Yeah.
But this is also, you're getting the ticket sales. You already have it. Nobody is staying extra and buying extra popcorn to watch UTEP play New Mexico. Nobody cares.
No, but if their match goes and you're getting there early, you might buy some extra popcorn.
You could have thrown your fans a bone, like Texas and like Pittsburgh, and said, we're not going to force you to do this. You guys bought all your tickets. I want you to come. You're going to celebrate a big win, more than likely, which happened with Wisconsin, and I'm guessing will happen with Texas and Pittsburgh. And not force our fans to go and watch something that they don't want to watch. And that's all. That's all I said. Nobody's losing any money on that. And that's the deal. And that's the rest of the story.
I'm gonna reach out. I am very curious to know whether it is the institution or the NCAA, which we know is a very well-run organization.
It's the NCAA.
So I would be curious to know if Texas and Pitt would choose to have their teams play first or not. Also, there are games at noon. And we are thankful that the Badgers play last instead of first because they would be on during our program otherwise. So it worked out great for us. Again,
Jesse, how big of dogs are we versus Stanford?
I don't think we are.
Why are we a three seed then?
Because Wisconsin had some blemishes in the middle of the season when some of their core players were out. Most notably, Charlie Furbringer, the setter, who is essentially the quarterback of the offense. Everything, when you think of bump, set, spike, the set is the key component of that. She's the setter. So she touches the ball.
Is that how volleyball works?
Yeah. Well,
Volleyball?
Hey, not everybody. No, I thought that was
this is what you get when you get an hour and 40-minute long pregame show.
That was a helpful explanation for some of our fans
Texas
who
match
may not
goes.
Know.
I hope that goes to quadruple overtime. I hope you're sitting there for four blanking hours. And next thing you know, you're running Antiques Roadshow during the middle of that. That's what I hope happens.
So with Charlie Furbringer and Grace Egan missing some time in the middle of the season, Wisconsin lost a couple of matches, didn't fare very competitively against Nebraska, Penn State, and USC came to Madison and beat us. And that's why we are a three seed, but we are
can
fully
we
healthy
say
now.
Without a doubt, can we beat Nebraska? Like, if we find a way to beat Texas, can we beat Nebraska?
Literally nobody has beaten Nebraska. So it's,
Jesse, I'm asking, can we beat him?
I think Wisconsin views Nebraska the same way that the 2015 Wisconsin men's basketball team viewed Kentucky. Where they've gotten us before, they got us last year in the Elite Eight.
Why not us?
Bring them on. If Wisconsin were to face Nebraska, it would be in the national championship match.
I thought you were going to say it was going to be like Gary Anderson at the Big Ten championship against Ohio State. I thought that.
No, it would be more.
I'm glad you didn't.
I would hope it would be more like Brett Bielema against Nebraska in the Big Ten championship, 70 to whatever it was when Wisconsin was 6-6. Yeah, so Nebraska's the best. They are number one. They've been number one all season long. They're undefeated. They're by far the best team in the country. If Wisconsin were to play them, it'd be in the national championship match in Kansas City. And Wisconsin's played them before, longtime rivals. That would be awesome, but we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. Let's take care of Stanford on Friday first.
Go 1-0 every match, indeed. All right, so no apologies have been proffered. But we're still going to keep doing the show. You're not leaving?
I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving! But I'm irritated that I don't understand when you're dead wrong about something, why guys can't just admit that they're dead wrong. Like it bothers me. But
yeah, I don't know why the NCAA won't admit that they're wrong to put the home institution in the first game at two of their four sites. I'm curious too. I would agree with you on that.
That wasn't the argument. It's that
I know,
happened.
But I flipped it.
The real problem here is Pittsburgh, I think, because I think it makes sense if you're playing during the day on a weekday to have a set time for your home fans to be there, because you're probably leaving work or taking kids out of school, whatever. You don't want to be sitting around.
I mean, like a Thursday, like Wisconsin played. Yeah, like a Thursday. Okay.
No, but Wisconsin played after 6 o'clock at night. So once it's
they didn't
after,
have to.
When it's at, but they did. So when it's after work, you can roll in kind of whenever. The rules are a little more loose. Pittsburgh, the one is, they're playing at night and they're starting early. They're the ones that are throwing this whole thing off.
Okay.
That's all.
Yeah, I don't want, I know, I'm guessing our YouTube chat's probably cussing us out right now, and I get it. But it's just something that I was really hoping with some guys that I really think have a lot of integrity. You, Jess, well, I really feel like you guys...
I love that you're trying a different
like
angle
guys,
now. I respect the change of
the
angle.
Because, no, I feel like I respect your opinions. You guys give good feedback. There's times that I'm wrong, that I admit that I'm wrong, and I get pushback. And then when it comes the other shoes on the other foot, when you guys just kick me with that shoe right into Keister... It is troublesome, that's all.
I appreciate you appreciating our integrity. I would say we admit we're wrong lots of times. I refuse to agree to this premise, but that's okay. Agree to disagree. But we agree on Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
We do, and ensure your home remains comfortable before the brutal post-holiday winter we've gotten. And hopefully you've been moving and getting your Pella Windows put in. It's been cold. It's been snowy. You know, Santa's magical, but his elves, they are not qualified to build Pella windows and doors. Pella wants to make everybody's holiday brighter and clearer through those beautiful new windows. And is there anything better? You just sit back in your house. You got your beautiful windows. You look out and you see that snow falling, and you feel that heat hammering your face because those windows are so secure. It's not drifting out. It's hitting you, and you're saving on energy. And you get those great vistas. And Pella's elves, they install year-round, and they'll finish installation in as little as a day. Hurry up. The deal ends December 31st. Schedule your free consultation today at PellaWI.com. Certain restrictions do apply. See showroom for details. That painted you a real nice holiday picture, didn't it?
Yeah, you
sitting
did great.
In your chair.
Really
fireplace
well delivered.
Lit, looking mm-hmm. out with the snow. I think a fluttering snow is the most beautiful snow. A fluttering snow. And that's what you can do with Pella.
The fluttering. Snow's coming down. It's fluttering your Pella window.
I can't wait for the royalty-free music, Christmas music today.
That's today, right?
Yep, that's what we were told.
Yes, it is.
I'll believe it when I hear it, which will be next. It's Wilde and Tausch.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Call Gina Della from Pella today, 855-PELLA-WI, and online at PellaWI.com/radio.
That's supposed to be music for Christmas. That's what that is.
Christmas Spirit, the name of this song.
That's not bad.
Okay, I'm gonna reserve judgment.
Get what you pay for in life. Get what you pay for in life.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. As we continue with our royalty-free music marathon here on Wilde and Tausch, we will continue to test drive some Christmas music. Before we get to Brian Bulaga, you know how Tausch might have been irritated with us yesterday and maybe a little bit more today. You know who I'm irritated with? The Josh Jacobs haters Certainly, he has not had the season he had last year. He's been banged up. He's faced early in the season defenses that said, we're not going to let Josh Jacobs beat us, except, of course, Mike Tomlin. And I get it. I understand he's not above criticism, and his yards per carry are down and everything else. Offensive line that was all jumbled. But I'll tell you this. I'll tell you what, man. That play he makes on the third down on the go-ahead touchdown drive, when he's surrounded by five dudes in Bears uniforms and he turns that into a 21-yard gain, that was one of the better runs I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah.
And the same for Matt LaFleur, who, when he was asked after the game how he managed to do that, Matt LaFleur said he didn't know. So I thought maybe it'd be worth asking, now that you've seen it on film, how he did it. Didn't have an answer for that either. Here's Matt LaFleur.
Matt, I think Bill was the one who asked you yesterday about the 3rd-and-1 play that Jacobs made, and you said you didn't really know how he did it.
I still don't know how he did it.
That's my question. When you watched it on film,
I'm like, yeah. So we cut the D end. We weren't blocking him on purpose. We were trying to arc release for the backer. Or that was a safety, I can't remember who it was, down. And then, either run off or block the corner. And Jalen Johnson fell off, and there was four guys at the point of attack. And I think it just speaks to the kind of competitor Josh Jacobs is, his ability to just will himself, just like the no different than the touchdown run. I mean, he's who he is. I mean, he's a great one, and we're lucky to have him. But I love his mindset and just how he goes out there and competes and fights for every yard.
I am befuddled by this because I understand his numbers are not what you would like them to be. He's got to get about 275 yards to get to 1,000 yards for the season still. But how do you not want Josh Jacobs to be your running back?
Ask Gabe. Ask Jesse. I don't know who else has been sitting here.
Joshy.
I didn't Joshy say
Big
it.
Cat.
There have been people on our station and other places that have brought up the fact that they thought this offense would be better suited without him. And that when he got injured, it wasn't a big deal.
Yep.
And he missed games, it wasn't a big deal. And by the way, Emmanuel Wilson filled in really nicely in that Minnesota game. But does Emmanuel Wilson make that play for 21 yards? He doesn't. And that's my own opinion. But Josh Jacobs, he is special. Now, does he run the stuff that exactly the way Matt LaFleur wants it, where you're doing a bunch of outside zone, you can play action? It's not what he loves doing. But to Matt's credit, he's hung in there with Josh, and he's given Josh Jacobs the opportunity to run the stuff that he is best at. That's a flexibility, that's adaptability. That is where you get new information and then you apologize and or adjust to it. You don't just stick your head in the sand and say, nope, it's what we do. So I give him, Matt LaFleur, credit. Josh Jacobs, what you kind of hope is that he is not as beaten up as maybe he had been in the past, a la like Aaron Jones in the playoff run, where he's fresh. James Starks, playoff run back in the Super Bowl. You kind of like having a back. Now, Josh Jacobs has got, I don't know how many carries he has on the year, but you just know he brings that physicality to it. And I think the Packers, obviously, that is what they're looking for. And Josh Jacobs showed exactly what was needed in one of the biggest games of the year. He delivered some of the biggest punches at the end of that fight.
Josh Jacobs on the season, 206 carries, 817 yards, 12 touchdowns, averaging 4 yards a carry. He got to 4.0 yards per carry finally for the season. Emmanuel Wilson, 88 carries, 351 yards. That is a 4 yards per carry average. And 3 touchdowns. Josh DiMaggio would like to defend himself, Jesse, because he thinks we are misrepresenting his position.
That can be arranged. All right, let's put this up here. All right, is he here? Josh, you there?
I'm here.
No, oh, that's too bad.
Hey! Hi, Big Cat.
Wait, you guys can't
hear
me?
This morning?
No, you sound great.
You sound awesome.
It's too bad we can.
You had a good royalty-free Christmas music to share with me while you're at it.
Explain yourself, Big Cat.
Yeah, I'm going to say this statement, which I've sent to you guys in text message and I've said on the air at various points. The Green Bay Packers are more talented with Josh Jacobs carrying the ball. I don't think Emmanuel Wilson is even 70% of what Josh Jacobs offers. I think Josh Jacobs is that talented. When we were talking about this, this hinged on the fact that there was a point, up until recently, where the Green Bay Packers were remarkably inefficient at running the ball. They were consistently putting themselves behind the sticks, and a lot of that had almost nothing to do with Josh Jacobs. It was a lot the struggle of the offensive line and how defenses were playing and having success against the Packers. My whole point all along was we have what I believe to be an MVP candidate, and the Green Bay Packers are not relying on that guy enough, and they aren't calling his number enough in Jordan Love. So while the Packers have a guy who's better, but when they were catering to him and running so much as they were, and not running the boot actions and not running the play actions and not getting the looks they wanted because, well, that wasn't working, that was inefficient and it was not good for the Packers offense in the long run. The Packers have now corrected a little bit of that because we've seen over the past few weeks some of the bigger holes all season. And the offensive line has improved, and that's made Josh Jacobs even more efficient and the passing game even more explosive. But at the time, and when you're running that efficiently, it was not the best way to score points and to win football games, and I think the results of those games, in which they got losses, was indicative of that.
Tausch?
He's backtracking. He said that the offense was better suited.
This is exactly what I said.
Beep.
Nah, you backtracked, and that's all right. Hey, Josh, I don't want you to be an ostrich. I don't want you sticking your head in the sand.
You never heard. Hold on. You never heard me say it in the first place. So I think all of your information was maybe relayed to you.
Sure.
Relayed to you through other parties.
Yeah, that's part of life in 2025, Josh. You get information relayed back and forth.
Right, but you're accusing me of backtracking, but you don't know what I said in the original part, so it can't be a backtrack if you can't provide me the evidence.
Tread carefully, Josh. He's on one today.
My only issue with that, and Tausch, help me out here so then we can get to Brian Bulaga, is that your argument about the inefficiency of the offense, I feel like there are other factors involved there, including the way defenses were playing them. And the frustration you guys had was that they weren't taking shots downfield. They're not going to take shots downfield against defensive looks that are not good for throwing the ball down the field. So when they're playing their safeties back, their rules tell you, we're going to run the football. And because their offensive line was not very effective, and because Josh Jacobs was dinged up, and whatever other reasons there were, you weren't getting the efficiency you were looking for. But I think you were I don't know what you were blaming that on other than the circumstances. Seemed to me you were blaming it on the quality of the running back's performance and the play caller's decision-making. Is that not an accurate depiction of your position?
The Josh Jacobs critique as much as it was critique. It was he was in a spot. Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, ran more two high safeties than he had in his career. And the Packers were incapable to do that because that's not the style of defense he typically.
He's in a studio.
Right.
Why
no
is he
sense.
Breaking
I,
up?
We got
royalty free Josh. We're getting like every third word.
Josh, how are we missing your audio chopping up every like other word? What is
you're in a studio. You're in the Gruber offices.
What connection we could possibly have? How is this happening?
I have no answer for that. microphone attached to a
board. Josh and Gabe and everybody else has always been saying that Josh Jacobs is the man, even though I know Gabe joined us to discuss it. But Josh is right. I don't have the goods right in front of me to call him on it, so I'll have to go back and check the tape, and we'll – I doubt I'll do that. But if I do, I'll be the first to bring it back to you.
Well, maybe you'll just kick back with a Coors Light, put your feet up, and listen to Josh disparage Josh Jacobs.
Well, and we're heading out to Golden, Colorado for a big old ball game on Sunday. When you're out there, or you're here, or you're anywhere, and you want to enjoy and chill, crack open a Rocky Mountain Cold Coors Light brewed with that three-step cold process called Lager Cold Filtered, and it is cold packaged. Because it's made to chill. Celebrate responsibly, Coors Brewing Company, a Golden,
Colorado. Brian Belaga joins us next. It's Wildy and Tausch.
Wildy and Tausch on 100.5 ESPN is brought to you by Everlight Solar. Save money, save the planet. Everlight Solar.
The royalty-free holiday music rolls on. I'm so fascinated by this whole realm. I can't wait to get further into it. But we don't have time to waste talking music when it's time for Brian Belaga on Wildy and Tausch. Brian, good morning, buddy. Ah! Merry Christmas! The tree
Merry
is
Christmas.
Up!
It sure is. It sure is.
Are you farther from the camera, or is that tree so large that it even makes you look tiny?
No, the tree's huge. Abby went a little bit bigger than normal this year with the tree. A little bit bigger than usual. So I was a little bit shocked when she put this size one in here. Normally it's a little one. This one's a lot bigger. So, yeah.
Did you go and cut it down? Like, is it a family deal where the whole crew goes, or is Abby just going to... like the local store and grabbing it and throwing it on the back of the car?
No, these are not spruces. We'll just put it that way. These are plastic. These are plastic.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
Yeah. Oh. You know the Christmas tree farms down here in Florida, we'll just say they're not fantastic.
Okay.
The Christmas orange tree.
Yeah.
That you put in your living room instead.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't know what critters you may get, so it's just better off not. The fake tree is fine.
Love a good
fake
critter.
Fake tree is fine.
Brian, so we were talking before you came on to Josh DiMaggio, who was disparaging Josh Jacobs, which you would think Josh's would stick together, but that's not the case here. And I understand he hasn't had the productivity that he had last season, but I thought the run he had that set up the go-ahead touchdown that he scored kind of epitomized why he's special, even when other things aren't going. Like, that was not, Matt LaFleur explained, you know, they're not blocking the defensive end, but they should have blocked other people. I don't think you're looking for five guys to be surrounding your running back on a critical third and one, and he somehow makes chicken salad out of you-know-what. You know, that when you watch him this season on film, what do you see and how do you explain kind of his reduced productivity?
Yeah, I think first things first, I don't think this takes too much of a, you know, evaluation, that the offensive line hasn't been good enough blocking up front for him to really get going. I mean, it kind of started week one. We saw issues with that week one, and it kind of continued on, and then the injury started to pile on for this offensive line. Then we started to see mixing of combinations up front. And when you start mixing combinations of guys up front, that messes with the run blocking right away. That's the first thing it messes with, because guys are trying to, you know, get a feel for each other blocking up front and techniques and styles. And, you know, maybe Josh DiMaggio, that is, maybe doesn't understand the intricacy of that. And, you know, maybe a guard, one tackle isn't used to the way the guard is heavy on a double team, or a center isn't used to the way a guard lays heavy on a, I don't know, scoop or something of that nature. You know, there's different intricacies of the way guys block. And so when you are rotating guys in and out, it complicates things in the run game. It just does. And then already to begin with that, they were struggling with those things to begin with the starting five. So yeah, to me, it starts up front, right? Like that to me is where this thing began. And I think now we're starting to see some better production with this group of five that they have in there right now. Like, I think we're seeing better production. But to sit here and lay into Jacobs is, like, that's wild to me. Like, that to me is, like, the craziest. No.
Well, like, Blue, isn't it, Brian, isn't it about the fact that LaFleur wants to run the hard play action and the under center stuff? And we've said that's not what Josh likes doing more. He likes the duo. He likes gun. He likes that. Isn't that part of that critique that Josh, everybody knows that Josh Jacobs is a better, more accomplished, and we saw it with that great 21-yard run. Like, not many guys are doing what he did there. But that would be the critique, is that he kind of can limit some of the things you do play action-wise. Isn't that kind of what a lot of this stems from?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what people have kind of gotten to, and probably most likely it's they're used to seeing a certain type of play action game from when it was Aaron Jones and those style of backs. And they're used to seeing that hard wide zone play action with a boot or Jordan or Aaron at even to that point. Quick pulling the ball out and firing a shot over the middle to a receiver and it being wide open and things like that. And they just really haven't gotten to that with Jacobs, whether Jacobs doesn't like that or he's not comfortable doing that, or in training camp or in practice it just hasn't looked as clean. I don't know what it is, right? Like, that's really I don't have an answer for that. That's not information I'm privy to. And I'm sure if Jason asked that question – that would not get answered, honestly. So,
nope.
And to be told, well, we're still doing that. Well, not really.
No,
like,
not.
Like you're not really doing that. So, there's a reason why they're not doing it, but I don't really have the answer to it. But I will say, on the flip side of it, you're getting a different style of run game with a different back that is effective. Now, is it as effective this year? No, because I think the guys up front aren't kind of executing the blocking scheme as good as they did last year. Like, I mean, and that's, I mean, to be honest with you, you look at both sides, like you look at tape from last year and you look at tape from this year and you see how things were done. It was cleaner last year for Jacobs. Like, he was not getting it last year. He was able to get into the line of scrimmage untouched, right? Like, he was able to get and set his blocks untouched into the line of scrimmage and do what he's really good at doing. And that's setting up the second level blockers, which is what he's fantastic at. This year, he's having to try to dance around at the line of scrimmage, which for his style of running is bad. Like, that's how you beat duo, is penetration up front right away and make him dance around at the line of scrimmage. And that's been the issue. So, like, to blame this on Jacobs is, like, I'm so confused. The guy runs for how many yards last year? And all of a sudden, what, you think he forgot how to run the ball? Like, I'm sorry. But, like, at the same time, though, I think this group that's together right now, this starting five that's going right now, I think they're starting to kind of click a little bit better, and the run game is improving in ways, and it's starting to look better in aspects, you know, throughout as games go on here, which I think is a positive thing for Jacobs and for the offense in general.
Well, and to your point, he still had the majority of his yards came after contact last year, as compared to Saquon Barkley. Right. And now he's got even a higher percentage of his yards are after contact, and they were high last year. So for it to be even greater tells you that penetration is part of the issue. But again, it's not that I don't understand some of Josh DiMaggio's critique. I think the idea that he is in some ways detrimental because of the way Matt LaFleur calls the game or whatever you think. That was the part that I wasn't on board with. All right, Brian, I want to ask you one other thing, and then we'll take our first break with you. What were your expectations of Christian Watson, and by how much of a distance has he outkicked them in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you don't know how, and I've said this because obviously I've come back from
twice.
Full of them. Tausch has done it. You don't know what to expect when guys come off ACLs. And I know all the signs where everyone kept saying, like, he looks good. You know, I mean, he looks really good. And, like, that's great. Like, and obviously, like, it's good that he was looking good in practice and running and doing things like that. But it's a different beast when you step on the field and you're having to do it live and guys are actually trying to cut you down from the legs and things like that. It's a different ball game. But he has absolutely blown the expectations out of the water. Like, right? Like, he has exceeded that. And how good he looks is, I mean, to come back, like, mid-season, right, and do it mid-season is wild to me, right? Like, normally guys come back maybe, like, a couple games into the season, right? That's normally the way these things work. But the fact that he comes back mid-season, jumps right in, and he looks like this, phenomenal, right? Like, and now it's looking like 14 and a quarter is a bargain. It's an absolute bargain to get him next year on 14 and a quarter. But it's all credit to him, the way he worked and kind of just how he went about his business getting that knee ready. I mean, it's all a credit to him and how he's been able to push through it and prepare himself week in, week out now, taking care of that knee. Because once you go through the ACL rehab, it doesn't mean like, okay, well, I'm good now, time to just move on. Like, you still have to do all that prehab and maintenance on your knees to make sure it's good from week to week. Like, that's still something you got to pay attention to. And clearly he's doing it. He's doing all the things that's needed to make sure that he continues to not just play at like a high level. He continues to exceed it week after week, which to me is the most impressive part about his game right now, because every week he just looks better. And to me, that's the wild part about this whole thing.
All right, Brian, we're going to take a break, and then we'll get into some more offensive line discussion, including my elevator ride with Elgton Jenkins. After Tausch tells us about Iron Jock and gets a much more manageable caller for our contest.
No. Just so we know, Jesse, what is the all-time record number?
Six.
Brian Bulaga's
the all-time record is six.
No, 200 no, and whatever we did last week. 247.
We did a big number. Jesse cried and complained and ended up taking a day off the next day because of it.
None of that.
So
happened.
I want you to make sure we respect the streamers so they can get this Tumblr. Which, by the way, I got this Tumblr. It is blank and awesome. It's stainless steel. It's big. It's Christmassy. It's an awesome Iron Jock tumbler. So, Brian, you tell me what number you think is fair for a caller.
And okay. Then Tausch will add 40.
Okay. To respect the streamers, because we got to respect the streamers. I'm gonna go after my old P. Tausch, 65. Caller 65.
Okay.
I think that's
very
nice.
That's
a good number.
It's pretty reasonable.
That's a very nice number. I think Jesse would be very nice.
And then Tausch is going to ask Brian Bulaga's number.
What is 75 plus 65?
I don't know. 65 sounds good, though.
It's 140, which we've done before.
We'll stick with 65 today. I can't believe how nice Brian is to you with all the smack you talk about Brian. But I ain't talking any smack about Iron Jock, because if you're looking for the perfect holiday gift, or you just want to upgrade your own gear, you need to check out the holiday sales going on right now at Iron Jock. You know I'm a big believer in their performance apparel. Tough, comfortable. And thanks to their exclusive silver ion technology, it actually fights odor, which, let's be honest, we all appreciate, especially hockey parents. We all appreciate that. You can find all across their lineup, hoodies, tees, shorts, and more. Stock up on their holiday savings at ironjock.com. Again, that's ironjock.com. Gear that works as hard as you do. Right now, caller 65 will win an Iron Jock tumbler. Again, that is caller 65 at 844-770-3776. 844-770-3776.
We continue with Bronco. Sorry.
That's way too nice. 65? Very nice.
In honor of Aaron Banks.
Banksy playing good ball.
He is indeed. More with Brian Bulaga next. Stick around.
This is Wilde and Tausch, brought to you by Grassland Butter. Grassland Dairy is Wisconsin. Learn more at grasslandbutter.com.
All the hits you know and love from the holiday season here on Wilde and Tausch. More with Brian Bulaga. Hey, Brian, quick question before we get into offensive line play. I asked Matt LaFleur about Bo Melton because it struck me immediately after his touchdown. And he was mic'd up for the game. So I was watching this from the Packers earlier today as well. Like, there's excitement whenever there's a touchdown, obviously. But, man, the level of exhilaration and euphoria for Bo feels a little next level-y to me. And I know I like Bo a lot, so maybe it's my bias. But are there just certain guys? Like, he almost feels like the walk-on at the end of the bench when he goes into the blowout college basketball game and he hits a three from the wing and everyone is super excited for him. Like, the level of excitement for his touchdown.
You talking about, like, Isaac Gard? Are you putting him in the same category as Gardo's kid?
There's been lots of those guys dating back to my time as a student at Wisconsin.
You literally just described Gard's kid.
I know, not exclusively him, though. Like, every team has that guy, right? Who's Howard Moore is the greatest example from my time as a student. Like, when he would go into the game, there was everyone loves Howard Moore. To this day, everyone loves Howard. And so when I watched the reaction, the sideline exploded. And it's not like there's not excitement for other touchdowns, but it was just different. Do you see that? And then, more importantly, do you remember having guys during your decade here that there was just something a little bit different about how strong people felt about them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the excitement would probably be because of what happened with him in preseason.
Sure.
Right? Like, I think moving him around and kind of, you know, hey, you're going to go play DB. And then, you know, we get 6 weeks into the season and now you're going to go play wide receiver. And then he goes out and plays wide receiver and has a couple drops and people are all over him. And now, you know, now he's back playing wide receiver and he makes a huge play in a major game in a critical moment. And people, I think how hard he works on special teams and how critical of a piece he is on special teams. When guys make big plays like that, they get super excited for him and people appreciate guys like him, right? Like, I think mm-hmm. he's very appreciated. And I don't know if he ever scored a touchdown or not, but I know when this guy made plays all the time, and he did on special teams a bunch, but I don't know if he ever scored a touchdown. Maybe you could double check it. But people reacted that way. And he's a coach now, and I think you know where I'm going with this. That was Chris Banjo.
Mm-hmm.
Played with him forever. Whenever Chris would make plays, people would go nuts for him because they knew how hard he worked. How much he cared about his job and how much passion he had towards it and everything like that. And whatever role he was given, he accepted it and he did it at a million miles an hour. So, like, to me, that's what it kind of reminds me of a little bit, right? So I think it's just because you appreciate those types of guys. And when they get their opportunity, they take advantage of it. And people getting on Bo Melton earlier when he got thrown in there to go play wideout and he had a couple drops, it's like, well, come on, like, he doesn't practice the position. Like, and now you're asking him to go catch slants over the middle when he doesn't do it in practice. It's like, come on, like, let the guy get a couple reps in practice before you start asking him to go do it in live action.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly he's been doing that. He gets the trust from Jordan Love throwing him a deep ball over the middle, and that's where we're going. People are hyped for him. So, like, to me, that's what you're going to see a lot more of when you introduce Reed back into this thing. They're going to start cutting guys like Bo Melton loose. right? Like, he's going to get cut loose. Mm-hmm. You'll see Wicks get cut loose. Like, Golden may start getting lost in translation on defenses, and he'll get cut loose. And to me, like, that's what's going to start happening more as all these guys start to get healthy and come back and play well. Like, guys are just going to get lost in the secondary and just start floating open. And Jordan's very good at finding the open guys, we all know, because there is no number one. There's no number one. It's whoever's open. It's whoever's open. And he's very good at finding who's ever open. And that is a perfect example of it.
Blue, don't you think Christian Watson's number one now?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the number one. I mean, there's no Tucker Kraft. Nope. It's Christian Watson. And to be honest with you, if you would have had a Tucker Kraft and Christian Watson, the way they're – oh, my gosh. Like, it's just
– it's a thing of beauty.
It would have just been – I mean, I don't know what defenses would have done. I really don't with the issues it would have caused over the middle and then running seams with that. Like, I just don't know what they would have been able to do to defend that. Like, because it causes – because you could take Christian Watson deep – then you could run Tucker Kraft through the seam, and that puts that safety in such a bad situation. Like, it does. It puts him in such a bad situation that no matter which side he picks, he's going to get beat, and it's just – but, I mean, again, that's for next year. But regardless, we're in this year. Right now, yeah, Christian Watson is playing, like I said in the prior segment, he's playing at a level that is unbelievable.
Blue, why wouldn't I'm trying to figure out why teams aren't just looking at what the Carolina Panthers did, or you just sit too deep and say, can Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur be patient? Because what totally the Bears agree. Did, I think they probably looked at it and thought, we're not going to be able to hold up against their run game, so we have to do this. We can't generate a pass rush with four, so we have to walk people up, and then that gives – a one-on-one to Christian Watson, who just beats him like a drum on a slant. Is it a personnel thing? Because if you're going to do that, you need – what's the dude's name from Carolina who is criminally underrated? Their defensive tackle. Is it Brown?
Brown.
From Auburn.
Yeah. Yes,
oh,
Brown.
Criminally underrated player. He whooped us, and that was part of the reason why Carolina was able to do it. But is it just a personnel thing? Or if I'm playing the Green Bay Packers, I'm going to sit too deep and I'm going to say – let's see how patient you are. Let's see you take the dink and dunk, because Jordan Love's a gunslinger by nature. He wants to go deep. He ain't interested in taking dinky, 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 dinky. He wants to go. Is it all just personnel? Or am I crazy to think sit too deep and let's see what Green Bay can do?
No, because, I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, because it is personnel, because we saw it on the first drive. Literally the first drive, they get a big run on first down, right? And it's second down and I think three or four. They're in two deep again. They run a pass. He gets sacked. And then the next play is the pick. They could have just ran it again and gotten the first down and new set of downs. But, you know, it's the patience thing. Can they stay patient enough when they're in two deep and just – keep pounding the rock on these teams and just saying, hey, we're going to make you get out of this too deep so we can throw it on you. That's the question. Can they do that? And if I'm a defense, I'm going to test them on it. And if you have good personnel up front like Carolina or like we're going to see this week against Denver, when you have that good personnel, that's what I would do. I'm going to sit too deep and say, hey, I think I can beat you with my front four. We're just going to sit my safeties deep and beat us. Like, you run it, and if you try to pass it, I think I can get home with four. So, like, that would be – if I'm a D coordinator, that's what I'm going to do. Now, we got to look at what we have in the NFC, right? Like, let's see the NFC and these D lines that can do that right now. There's not too many.
Philly?
Like, if we're
Philly?
Philly can't do anything right now. Philly can't do anything.
Think even
right
if
now.
Jalen Carter gets back, Philly kind of did. You don't think so?
No, the Bears ran it down their throat with Jalen Carter.
Yeah.
I mean, they ran it for almost 300 yards with Jalen Carter. So, like, I just don't, and the Philly may not even make the playoffs if they continue on this path.
Yeah, I think Dallas could catch him, but it's going to take an epic collapse, which is possible. We've seen that movie before with Philly.
I mean, I'm just saying, what are they, 8-5 now? You lose four more. How many games are even left? Five? Four? I don't even know.
Four games left.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just, things can go south, and the way it's going there. My gosh, I have a buddy that's an Eagles fan. I saw him yesterday. He's like, "Can you believe what's happening over there?" I'm like, I don't pay attention too much, but sure. Yeah,
Just flip him off and fire an egg at him. That's what Philly fans love doing, having five-year-old kids flip people off and throw eggs. Blue, what do you see? Because I have been – I'm very leery of this game Sunday. Very leery.
Yeah.
Denver's defense is the real deal. Bonita, right? 15 is Bonita. I just want to make sure I'm saying his name right.
I think
he's
it's
a
Bonita,
stud.
Yeah,
bendy, flexible, Bonito. Fast, quick twitch. Bonito.
Bonita.
Denver's defense is the real deal, and it's going to be a heck of a test out there. What? Are you as nervous as I am about this matchup?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is like I said this during Minnesota week when I was in Green Bay, and they were asking me, how are we going to know in this offensive, how this offensive line is? I'm going to go Denver. And I said Denver because that is a Super Bowl caliber defense. That's what that is. That's a Super Bowl caliber type defense. I'm not saying that Denver Broncos as a team is. I'm saying that defense that they have, especially the front four, that's what you see in the Super Bowl. Like, that's the type of group that you would play in a Super Bowl. They're very good. Allen, Bonito, even the other edge rusher. They got two of them, both guys. There's him and there's the other guy. They both have, like, over 10 sacks, I think, both edge rushers. They're, like, ridiculous. It makes me a little nervous because, like I just said, they can literally sit in two shell and they can stop you in both aspects of the game. They can stop the run and they can rush the passer, right? Like, and I've played in Denver multiple times. You've played in Denver. Like, it just seems like when you play out there, and the elevation and stuff like that, that's all that, you know, that's one thing. It just seems like when you play in Denver, the minute something starts to kind of go a little haywire out there, it, like, tumbles on you. Like, it's just really weird. I remember we went out there against Peyton Manning, and we started the game, and it was going okay to start. And it's like, okay, like, it's not bad. And then all of a sudden, like, we went three and out twice in a row, and the game just took a left turn for the absolute worst. And I swear to God, I did not run block against Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware the rest of the game. And I was pass blocking for three straight quarters, and it was, like, a terrible experience for me. Like, it, not that, like, I got beat every play, but it was just, like, a really bad experience for, like, three quarters of the game. And, like, but that's the type of defense this one is. Like, that's the type of defense that Denver has again right now. That's how they've built this thing out again. They got great DBs. They got a great, you know, front four. Their linebackers are very fast. They run sideline to sideline. They're very good at all aspects of the game, and Green Bay's got a tough task ahead. Like, I think if you think you're going to go into Denver and throw the ball on them constantly, it is not going to be a friendly atmosphere for you. Like, I just don't think that can be the only way to beat them, because, like, you look at the teams that, I mean, have tried to do that against Denver, because that has been Kansas City style this year, is to try to throw it. That's been their way. They went into Denver and tried to do that, and that was not good. Like, that did not go well. And I get Denver's tackles and offensive line are not very good, but that's not a good formula. Like, you can't do that against them. You have to be able to run the ball and keep those edge rushers kind of off balance, because if you let those guys go, it's just a tough day, man. It's a bad day at the office.
No doubt. Blue, what did you see when you flipped on that's from the O-line, especially Belton? Everybody's interested in Belton. They're intrigued by Belton. What are we seeing?
Yeah, everyone's intrigued by him. And obviously, like, I think he's steadily – I don't think he by any stretch is, like, playing at, like – I mean – like all world level. Like, I'm not going to sit here and like toot a horn, right? Like, I'm not going to do that. But what I'm going to say is that I think he is playing better every week. Like, that's what I think. I think he's playing better every week, and I think he's improving. And I think you can tell he's gaining more confidence in himself and kind of fitting into that position. You can see him with just the way he was from week one, but his first time in there against Minnesota to now, you could see the confidence and just the way he's moving and his just his kind of technique wise, it looks like he's becoming more comfortable in his position, which from going from tackle to guard and kind of the way he's moved around a little bit is a compliment to him, right? Like, and yep. it's not like he's out there contrary to whatever other stats, like he's not out there getting beat in pass pro constantly. Like that wasn't the case against Chicago. I thought he was pretty good in pass protection against Chicago. Jordan was clean against Chicago, besides the sack that they gave up in that, you know, in the first drive that I talked about when they should have probably ran the ball again. He was clean against Chicago. Like, it was the O-line played well, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So, I think he's getting better every week. Again, in the run game, he is a very physical asset that fits what they want to do really well, right? Like, he's very physical at the point of attack. He gets great vertical movement off the ball in double teams. When he's singled up one-on-one, he displaces guys off the ball. I think he's getting better. The one thing that I've noticed, the only critique, if I'm going to give a critique, and I'm not Buckus, I'm not Steno, I'm not in their line room, that's not what I do. The only thing that, again, and this is going to be big for him this week against Denver's D-tackles, Allen and those guys, because they're very good at this. They're not big, you know, guys that, like Gilbert Brown type guys. That's not what they are. Like, they're not stationary guys. They're bigger, but they're quick movers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're able to laterally, they're very good. I've seen at times that's where he will struggle from time to time is with quick lateral movements, getting out of his stance. And it was on the road against Detroit where I noticed it, right? Maybe a little late on the snap count, maybe things like that. You don't hear the snap count perfect, or it's silent count, and you're a little off. That's going to be something really big for him this week that he has to pay attention to, is making sure he's able to adjust to movement well against these Broncos D tackles, because they do move, you know, I mean, they're very active inside with Denver. So it's making sure that he's on point with his assignments and aiming points and getting his feet down, because he's a big body. It's not like they're going to – if they have to go around him, that especially in pass pro, that's good for him. He can use his length and his body size to help him. But in the run game, it's making sure that he's getting his feet down and he's not lunging and reaching for guys and missing on single blocks, because that's what Denver does really good, is they make a lot of guys miss in the run game, get a lot of TFLs. That's what they're really good at.
All right, Brian, a couple of housekeeping matters. I think John Cooper was who you were referring to, who had 10.5 sacks last year. And has 7.5 this year on the opposite side of La Isla Bonita. I think the game you're talking about, 2015, you guys lost 29-10.
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers, 14 of 22 for 77 yards.
Yeah.
77 yards.
It's not very good.
How many total yards did we even have that game? If he only had 77 yards passing, that means we only had like 150 yards total offense.
You finished that game with the not so grand total of 140 total yards.
Yep, that's what I would. That's what I would assume.
Iowa's offense is looking at that game saying, "What the hell's wrong with you guys?"
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's
not
what I'm
bad.
Saying.
Thank it's you, like, Jesse. Appreciate it.
Yeah, hey Jesse, let's calm it down. I mean, let's you exactly. know you're in the studio there.
Yeah, Jesse.
I didn't even have to make
the joke. So, Josh did it for me.
Jason, tell Blue about your elevator ride so we can get a little Elton talk before we let him go.
Yeah. I do want to hear about the elevator ride.
So I actually, it was in the waiting area for the elevator, and then he went up in one elevator, and I waited for the media elevator because I don't really want to be
going. You didn't even have an elevator ride.
We had to wait for a while, so we got to catch up, and he's on a scooter. He had a surgery. And as I told Tausch, I did not tell him, as I suggested on the program, that maybe they were better off with Sean Ryan at center. Again, I believe
friends like Jason,
who needs anemones.
Oh, we love Elton. He sucks, and Ryan's a lot better. We've been a lot better on offense since you've been gone.
We love Elgton Jenkins as a guard for sure, and I have said from the beginning that I did not love the idea of moving a guy who's as good as a guard as he is, and I stand by that position. And maybe Elton would have found his rhythm. Brian's the one who breaks down the film. But yes or no, Elgton Jenkins is as good of a center as he is a guard.
No.
No. That's all I'm saying.
No.
And is Sean Ryan better as a center than he is as a guard?
Currently, right now, he's playing better, yeah.
Yes.
Which I didn't think was going to happen, which obviously I did not. I had no idea that was, you know, that was hard for me to predict.
Yep.
Right. Like it's hard to predict that thing. Right. Like, I mean, that's the tough part about it, but continue. Sorry. My bad.
No, that's all right. So it was good to see him. He's making progress. I don't know what his future holds and neither does he. I will, regardless of our little running joke here about the center thing, I will miss him if he's not on this team next year, and I am skeptical that he will. I like
he's
to take requests.
Hey, he ain't going to be on the team next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully he gets a Super Bowl ring, though.
Jesse, you know, like, see, like, that's the biggest, like, that's like kicking a guy when he's down. Like, you know, like, I mean, he's injured. Hopefully he gets a Super Bowl ring, and he doesn't get to play in the game. It's like, you know, like that's, you know, like way to kick.
This was going so well, and then Jesse got involved.
Yeah, we got Jesse involved too much.
Hey, Elton, you know, I know you broke your leg, but hopefully you get a Super Bowl ring out of it. It's like, you know, Jesse, gosh, man, like that's nasty. That's nasty. Like, that's not nice.
Rather that than not have a Super Bowl ring.
Oh my gosh. Yes, Jesse, we do want Green Bay.
How's this finish going for you, Jesse? Strong?
This is not what I had in mind. All right, so Giuseppe's question about how the Packers are using their tight ends will have to wait either for next week or for when I join you on Thursday on the Homer Hour to discuss it. So that was what I was going to discuss, but instead Jesse got involved and ruined everything. Brian, we appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Talk to you.
That is the great Brian Bulaga. He joins us every Wednesday to discuss all things Packers. Tausch, meanwhile, before we get to the top of the 10 o'clock hour, will tell us about American Family Insurance and what he and Sarah are doing this holiday season.
We're starting to wind down. We have till December 31st, and Sarah and I, we've teamed up again with American Family Insurance to raise money towards the American Family Children's Hospital through a virtual toy drive. All donations will go towards therapeutic supplies, toys that help thousands of children and families across the country. And American Family Insurance matches every dollar donated all the way up to $50,000 through the end of the year. Visit amfamkids.org to donate today.
The 10 o'clock hour starts at 10:23. It's Wilde and Tausch.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.